Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab, and this is Activate Yourself. And today I have the fabulous Dr. Liz Leek here on with me today because I want to have a conversation about women's health, and I want to have a conversation about bloody hormones, and I want to have a conversation about the things that matter, because I was listening to a man on TikTok who said in the most condescending way possible, you know, some women go through perimenopause. Duh. Number two. And it's not difficult to deal with. And I'm just like, how the hell would you know, number one? And number two, what the hell do you mean? Some women go through perimenopause. We all do, bish. We all do. 50% of the world goes through something we don't know anything about, we don't spend any money on. And it's only now that we're starting to spend money on teaching us about this. So I yanked Dr. Liz on here so that I can ask her questions about why is it that 80-something 2% of women go to their doctor, men and women, doctors, and ask them about perimenopausal symptoms, and they get given anti-bloody depressants? Why? Why is it that our doctors don't know enough about this? Oh, do you want me to ask you the question
so
differently?
I think
no more than they do.
Well, I mean, this is my natural interest, women's health. But I think a lot of the medical, conventional medical institutions are still running off the old education where we've, I mean, do you know what? The teaching around menopause is so minimal. I can't even remember being taught about the menopause in my medical training. And so I think it's learnt through our program at some stage, but we are very much ingrained initially that women get the menopause, they go through the menopause, and that's when the symptoms start. And it's only more recently that we've started to really have this conversation around the perimenopause. In the last 5 years, you know, it's just, we've exploded, haven't we, into conversations around women's health. And I think women are in such an unprecedented time of stress. This is having a huge impact on our physiology, and it's bringing a lot of these symptoms to the forefront.
Okay, let's start with that, because I am always saying when I teach women, your mother doesn't understand your life because you don't live the same life that your mother lived. But let's just break that down. Why are we under so much unprecedented bloody stress? Because from my viewpoint, I want your medical version, but from my viewpoint is the one core thing that's shifted. In the old days, we would have get pregnant, give birth to a baby, and people would help us look after them.
Yeah.
In this day and age, we do all of that and then we have to pay the bills for them.
Yeah. Well, I think society has changed hugely. So exactly as you say, where women used to sort of run the home, have the children, they would drop the kids off at school, they would do the housework and they'd go back and pick them up at the end of the day. Now women are largely working, you know, generally both partners in a couple are working. They're looking after their children, they're running the household, they're looking after their elderly family. You know, we're that really stretched sandwich generation and we are just juggling so many balls. Adding on to all of that, all the societal expectations to look a certain way, behave a certain way, parent a certain way, run your marathon, do your HIIT training fast. You know, it's just huge. And I think social media and the advent of being connected to the internet all the time doesn't help, because there's just noise around what we should be doing and how we should be doing it all the time.
While having absolutely a perfect manicure too at the same time.
Exactly.
Okay, but
I don't understand that.
I don't think we as women understand that, because I know that I've been a single parent my entire adult life to three children, and I was responsible for everything from 100% of their bills to 100% of their emotional stability to 100% of their physical whatever. You know, whether it was school or whatever. And when people would say, well, we have to manage stress, I would like laugh and go, yeah, which part you want to take away? Because, you know, please be my guest and take one of those away. We don't have any choice. So why do we keep talking about it?
I think because we're recognizing the impact it's having on us and our physiology and actually our long-term health. You know, there are studies now showing that the expected age of survival is starting to shrink, and stress has a huge impact on us, you know, for both men and women. But for women, our system is so delicately in tune with stress, because if we think, you know, many, many thousands of years ago to the ancestral women that actually we are, you know, our whole physiology was really born around survival and ultimately reproduction to expand our species. So we had to have a very delicate system. And this is still present. This is still what we're running off. It's just cerebrally, we are expected to cope with it better. But the same biology still exists.
Yeah, and we're at a stage where, and also because I think women are brought up to people please to such a large extent that we don't actually know how to say no to things. And instead we're taught resilience, like, you know, bounce. I always say this. We're not a bloody trampoline. Don't bounce back. Really, please don't, because it doesn't help you in any way. But we're not taught to manage these processes. Now, the next thing that comes into the equation is that usually when this pressure hits, is from about 35 onwards, 35 to 40, our children are slightly older, our marriages are showing cracks, let's not be rude about the husbands, but, you know, we're showing that that's when our parents start to have issues, we're doing better at work, and our kids start to really dislike us. And everything turns teenagers, it's also called teenage apparently, everything comes at the same time, and you've got to I wouldn't go back to my 35-year-old self if you gave me 100 million quid. I would not. It was so awful that I just, obviously about 100 million maybe be easier, but I don't think so. It would not take the emotional load of it away, right? So now you then get into a thing I know that you talk about, which is it perimenopause or is it burnout? And do we even give a shit? Why? Talk to me about that. What are the similarities and symptoms between burnout and perimenopause?
There's a huge amount of similarities. So perimenopause, exactly as you say, can start somewhere from our late 30s through to our 40s. And those often early symptoms of the perimenopause are new onset anxiety, recurrence of the old anxiety, or an exacerbation of an underlying one, poor sleep. And those two things combined can then just start to bleed into more problems. So the worse the poor sleep can, you know, that starts to result in a bit of a negative cycle. And eventually, you know, we start to see changes in our cycle and we enter into the vasomotor symptoms, et cetera, as we get closer to the menopause. Burnout, because of this delicate physiology that we have, has a very similar impact. So all of our hormones are produced from cholesterol. And if we think we kind of got a reserve, so say we've got 10 cholesterol molecules, we need to create enough cortisol and enough progesterone and enough estrogen out of this reserve. So if we're under a huge amount of stress, our body is fundamentally going to have to prioritize the hormones in order to survive over that of reproduction. Does that make sense?
Yes. Let me go back a step. You're saying that we have a set amount of hormones or that we only produce a set amount every day?
No, not quite that, but we have all of our hormones come from the same molecule. So only a certain amount can be produced from that reserve that each person has. So kind of trying to liken it to imagine you've got 10 molecules available of cholesterol. And, you know, if everything's going nice, tickety-boom, a lot of that would be funneled off towards creating the right hormones at the certain point in the cycle. So after ovulation, we need to make lots of progesterone as well as estrogen. But we also, with those cholesterol molecules, would need to be able to produce cortisol. So if we're under stress, we've only got that reserve. That's going to have to be, you know, a lot of that hormone production, that sex hormone production, is going to have to be diverted to preferentially produce cortisol. It's a very complicated biochemical process. But yes, so then we're going to create that and less progesterone. So then we start to experience similar symptoms to the perimenopause because those progesterone levels are lower. So progesterone is very good at calming us. It's a very nurturing hormone. It's very good for our sleep. It's very good for our anxiety. And so if we're making lots of cortisol, we kind of got all of those cortisol stress responses, but we've also got less progesterone. And so we might sleep worse. You know, the sleep quality becomes poor. We start to get anxious. That then leads into a sense of overwhelm. And you can see how everything starts to unfold. And so burnout can look very similar to perimenopause.
So you can get
the two crossed over.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be my next question. So basically you're saying we create hormones out of cholesterol, right? So, and from the cholesterol, we have a limited number of molecules that will create hormones. And as a result of that, it's going in one direction or another. Now, when the cortisol rises, which I'm always saying as well, that the cortisol increase comes also from social media. So we run through our stores of adrenaline much, much earlier and end up in cortisol. Why does the progesterone get affected and not the estrogen?
They both can get affected, but progesterone is often affected. It used to be called progesterone steel. We don't like that term anymore. But estrogen is produced, they're slightly different mechanisms. So estrogen is produced as the follicle is developed. Progesterone is developed in the second half of the cycle. And so there's a slightly different pathway, because cortisol actually can create or perpetuate the estrogen production, because cortisol can set up this another pathway that results in inflammation that adds to the estrogen. So we can end up with this differential.
Got it. But it's not creating progesterone. It's still, however, creating estrogen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that means that you're there with the estrogen is still there. So in a way, you kind of feel okay-ish, normal-ish, but you're starting to feel the effects of the progesterone dropping, which is the anxiety, the sleep, and all of these emotional issues that you actually get. But it's also your womb lining starts to thicken because you don't have as much. You have all the issues that come off of your endometrial lining. Now, ask me how I know. Now, here we are. And okay, so we're going to go for a quick break. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about what happens, if there's such a huge overlap between burnout and perimenopause, how the hell are we supposed to know the difference? Because yay, I needed another problem. Like I needed a hole in the head, right? So we'll be back in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're back. I now have to work out whether or not I have burnout or perimenopause. Firstly, why do I care? Why don't I just treat what's going on?
So I think for two reasons. One, we want to treat the impact that stress can be having at whatever stage in our life. We need to address those lifestyle factors and the impact that stress is having for our long-term sustainable health. And secondly, because I think it's important to treat the right problem. If we start treating as perimenopause really early on, then what tools have we got left to deal with the actual perimenopause, you know, the actual perimenopause rather than the burnout further along down the line? Do you see what I mean? You know, we might start using those tools. We've got nothing in the back pocket to then come forward and really support those symptoms. So, and additionally, I then worry about setting baselines too high. So if we start adding estrogen much earlier on, then we're going to struggle to kind of address all of that further along when the burnout's, you know, still present, but the menopause is really starting to play havoc.
Okay. So what we're saying is that we should be looking at burnout as its own thing, because it's not as medical an issue necessarily as perimenopause is, in a way, because you have...
I still think there are medical ramifications of burnout. You know, absolutely. I think it's you know, vastly under-recognized in the medical world. But burnout we can address through a lot of lifestyle factors. Perimenopause definitely has, you know, there's a role to play for HRT. Okay. And sometimes we need to support burnout in a different way, perhaps with some HRT, but that's with the aim of trying to pull people back out of burnout so that they can enter into their menopause at the right stage.
Yeah, no, and because it has the effect of, you know, it affects your periods, and obviously because of the what you've just explained in all. Right. So What is it that we should do in order? Okay, no, before I ask you that question, is this why you hear stories of women who can't get pregnant and who are struggling and their periods go away and whatever, and they move to, I don't know, a villa by the beach in Spain or Portugal, and they end up having their periods and they end up having a baby in something? Is that why that is? Because it wasn't really perimenopause at all, or menopause. Yeah. It was actually burnout.
It's very often that case, exactly. So the impact of stress on that very delicate hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis. So the stress essentially just has a switch down effect, a down regulating effect on the cycle. And I say it to people over and over because we've all been there. We want to fall pregnant. I'm not all been there, but many of us have. And the stress then to make sure that you're having intercourse at the right time, you know, all of that stress has a huge impact. Then inevitably you hear stories where people just give up, or they have a baby eventually and then they're not even thinking about it, and all of a sudden they fall pregnant again. And so, yeah, that's a really good way of demonstrating the impact of stress.
Okay, perfect. So then what is it that we do? Let's look at burnout. What do we do in order to help burnout? Because in a way, if I understand you correctly, the first, say, 4 or 5 steps are the same for both anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. I think so. What I always like to do is start thinking about those lifestyle pillars. So we think about our diet, we think about our sleep, we think how we move, and about our stress management. So I think when you're asking me, like, the first things you're going to do, the greatest movement you can make is addressing that allostatic load of stress. So taking a step back, looking at how you're running your life, what is it that you can offload? What can you get some support on? Very often, because we're all high functioning, very efficient women, I see people doing everything for everyone. And so what is it that you can try and help other people take some responsibility for? Just to give you that little bit more breathing space.
I have a client who earned really high salary, who used to say, oh, I've got to run home. I'm going away for 3 days and I have to fill the freezer. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? And she goes, I have to fill the freezer. And she had a husband who wasn't working, a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old, 2 boys. And I said, do you think that they could learn to cook? And she went, oh, I don't know, because she was the highest earner. So she struggled with the emotional load of being the person that earned more than her husband. So this is how she felt like a wife. But it was such an unnecessary high-functioning.
Yeah. Just high functioning executive function, you know, or high, some people call it high functioning burnout.
So what I got her to do was I got her to teach each of them one dish. Mm. They literally only learned one dish, but having to teach each of them one dish meant that there were 3 nights that she never had to cook. And once they got the hang of cooking one dish each, oh my God, they cooked 2 dishes each. And then you got to the stage where she actually wasn't cooking in the evening, because you can't get rid of the kids. You can't get rid of your elderly parents. So if we know that there is, but you can get help, can't you, to make it all easier?
Exactly. You can work as a team. You know, you are a team at the end of the day. So even the little kids, you know, helping them to learn what they need for the beginning of the day, or getting them to be involved in their packed lunches. There's lots of little ways just to try and reduce that load. And then I think just finding it can just be a small 5 minutes a day of a way that makes you feel good. So for me, it's getting outside and doing some form of movement. And it can, you know, even if you just start out with 5 minutes, and then you'll be surprised. Those 5 minutes can increase to 10 minutes. And it might even be that you get up early just to give yourself that time ahead of the family. So finding a way to just sell, I think, is the first and foremost important thing to do.
I remember going to bed. This has a name, I think. You go to bed really late because it's the only time you have to yourself. So I think there's a way that there's a name where you go to bed really late at night because it's the only time you have to yourself, isn't it? There's a phrase for what you do, because that's when you get time alone. But
for some people that works.
Yeah, but I want to acknowledge that when you're in this position, it's friggin' impossible to even have the brain space to think, how do I make it better? And the only time we think it is when we're close to breaking point. by which point it's actually really hard to come back. So that's actually something that I want to acknowledge, because it's so bloody hard. I remember when I was running this huge company and I had my 12 employees and my 3 kids and whatever. And I did one of those tests. I remember doing an age test and I was 41 or 2 and it said that my actual age was 61 or something. And I was horrified, but it was really related. I know. I think I've now dropped down to my actual physical age, and my goal next is to bring it down a bit younger than that. So we're getting there.
Yeah.
I do not think women are congenitally created or culturally allowed to be in a place where they put themselves first. I just don't think they are. And so it's such a hard road for us to understand that. We're going to go for a quick break. And when we come back, can we just have a segment where we talk the last session of our talk together on how to actually manage perimenopause symptoms? Because we don't really know how to do that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, talking about perimenopause, firstly, there's this process. Like I was talking about a man who I was listening to, a doctor on the internet, talking about how some women go through perimenopause and it's not really that difficult to treat. And I wanted to slap him upside his head. Because first of all women go through perimenopause. Number two, it's actually difficult. Can we please acknowledge, and can I have your medical take on the fact that there is no one solution? There's no cookie cutter solution to managing perimenopause.
Well, 100%. And I say it literally every time I see a woman, there are no two women that have the same journey. Every single person has a different basis and a different experience. And my job is to try and help them through that as best as possible.
Yeah. And so every single symptom that you have is not the same as your best friend will have. And it absolutely, please, for the love of God, believe me when I say it's not what your mother had. And so the number of women that come in and say, yes, but my mother didn't do anything and she was fine. I don't need to do anything. What do you say to that?
I just say you're you. You have your own life, your own experiences, your own physiology. You know, this is your journey.
And why would you not make it easier if you possibly could? But the thing I want people to understand is that these statistics I've been looking at, and I'll get the numbers a little bit wrong, but without estrogen therapy, the risk of heart attacks and stroke goes up by about 62%, I think it was. And the risk of Alzheimer's dementias goes up by like 67%. So those are really huge numbers.
Yeah, and I think it's important at this point to probably define the perimenopause and the menopause. So in the perimenopause, we're in that run-up stage to the menopause. So the menopause, the definition is actually the anniversary of your last period. So it's actually a one-day event, the menopause. And so it's a totally retrospective thing that we're observing. After that menopausal day, you're postmenopause, and that's when your estrogen levels remain consistently low. So that's when that estrogen replacement is really vital for our bones, for our cardiovascular, for our metabolic function, for all the things that you've said. The perimenopause run-up, that's very different, because that's when we are still ovulating and we're entering into this transition between our regular, you know, obviously there's variations in terms of contraception, but if we kind of just go from our basic, you know, reproductive cycle of whatever variety you're having, and we've kind of got to transition through to no periods, and that can be very messy. So we often get shorter periods, then we start missing, then those gaps become longer, we can get the heavy periods, we can get all sorts going on. And actually, in that stage, we can get lots of peaks of very high estrogen. But what we do notice is the progesterone really steadily declines. Our testosterone levels are also steadily declining. So the way I often will work is, again, starting out, depending on where we think we are in that transition, starting out with our lifestyle factors to see what we can optimize to try and naturally improve the opportunity for our optimal progesterone levels, et cetera. And then start coming in with the bioidentical hormone treatment according to each person's individual preference. There are some supplements that can make a big difference as well. And so it's a sort of a graduated increase in the medical support, depending on the symptoms, depending on where you're at and everything else that's going on.
So can we separate out a little bit? I'm a huge fan of bioidentical hormones. I'm just like, if I was going to spend money on anything in my life, I would spend money on that. And I do. And I'm very clear about that. What is the supplement route? It's not instead of, it's as well as, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So as well as working with those lifestyle factors, some simple things I say pretty much every woman should be using as magnesium, a multivitamin, vitamin D, and a good omega as an absolute basic. Then we are going to tailor it according to each person's need and what symptoms they're experiencing.
I did not understand that vitamin D was so vital for breast health.
I mean, vitamin D is so vital for our whole body. It's actually a hormone in its own right. So mental health, our immune system, breast health, bone health, again, you name it. And pretty much everybody in the UK, I would say, unless they're supplementing, is deficient.
Yes, because we don't have any sun. But also one thing that I found out about 10, 15 years ago was that if you have brown or darker hair, you have a much, much higher chance of having low vitamin D because you need stronger in the sun in order to metabolize vitamin D. And that had a huge impact on us all during, especially with the Asian ethnic minority population with COVID, because we're already deficient of vitamin D. And then COVID kind of built on that core deficiency.
Yeah, exactly. So that is a basis, is a good starting point. And then working on those factors, so eat to nourish yourself, move to support your body.
Just stop, one move. Please, the number of women that come in that are running bloody marathons every day and taking an already traumatized system and traumatizing it more. Like I did CrossFit 4 times a week and nobody told me, actually, that I shouldn't do that because, in fact, I was putting my body under a huge amount of stress when it was already stressed. Can we talk about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So exactly what you said. So I think the first thing is to move in a way that makes you feel good, not makes you feel drained. If you're feeling drained and exhausted by something and you're struggling to get up the next day, that's too much. So too much is going to stress your system and then result in the higher cortisol levels. And actually, then you're fighting your own physiology because your cortisol is going to make you lay down more fat. And so you're doing the exercise probably to try and help with that. We want to exercise to make ourselves feel good and to feel strong. And we don't have to be a bodybuilder to feel strong. You know, we want to make sure we've got good bone mineral density, we've got good muscle mass. And those are the two key things to take us through, but, you know, reduce our opportunity for fragility. So whatever makes you feel good.
And
but
I've
not
noticed
having to push it too hard.
Yeah, exactly. I spent time with, like, my mother is about to turn 92, and I've just spent time with an 89-year-old man, Brazilian man, who worked in construction his whole life and has always built things. And I'm looking at the level of strength in his body. My mother's always worked out, but now I push really hard for her to go for a walk every day and do all those things, which it's harder. So if you're not the one looking after them, it's more difficult to do. But I think that how we manage this area, perimenopause and menopause, and our physical strength is literally the scaffolding and the foundation for our old age.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of women do really enter into this stage, to sort of exit those kind of motherhood years with all of that dependency. And all of this hormonal change, they suddenly kind of go, do you know what? I need to sort me out now and actually look after me and create exactly as you say, the scaffolding or the foundations for your older health. And I think this is I think we can look at this as a golden opportunity to try and put ourselves first and do the best for our future. So yeah, I think movement is really important. And I can be a bit hard on people about walking, because again, I sort of think, you know, we're humans, we're meant to walk. We're not meant to sit. We're meant to walk. We're meant to be moving. So we want to try and push it a little bit beyond that. You know, what can you do to optimize your bone mineral density, strengthen those muscles, keep your muscle density there as well? That brings us onto a whole other conversation, which we can have another time. But
No, I agree, and it's that thing where you have to learn. Nature actually, I think, created perimenopause to force us to put ourselves first as women in lives that don't ever lead to us putting ourselves first. You know, nothing that we do in our lives, culturally, emotionally, psychologically, end up with us teaching ourselves that we matter. And so Apples comes along and goes, hello, we have a little problem here, Houston, and it's better to make it now. And it does create a really big difference in how we see ourselves. And I watch women going through this process, and the ones that try to shortcut it are the ones that stay in pain and problems longer and longer. One thing, so I'd like to say before we finish that one of the things that I think we should be encouraging women during perimenopause is to really build a team of people that help you, because I don't want to say there's something wrong with you, but let's say you're out of balance when you go into perimenopause. And if you psychologically see yourself as being out of balance, what you would then do is, like, I had COVID for a year and I was forced to rethink all of my health. And I put a team in place to help me develop different parts of my health when I needed it at different times. But it literally took me a year to get to the place where I could do an hour's workout. A year. Four times CrossFit a week. But I was forced into understanding that this is a journey, and there was nothing that I could do to change the fact that it was a journey, much as I hated it. And I think perimenopause is like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge physiological change. And so with that, there's wide repercussions. And I think, we need to think of this culturally, shift our mindset around it. You know, you were mentioning about, you know, how I suppose what I'm trying to say is, there are some cultures which do revere postmenopausal women. You know, they become the crone. They become the top of the hierarchy.
Wise woman.
Yeah. And you look at some of those cultures and they don't experience the menopause in the same way that we do.
Yes.
And, you know, I think if we look and we reflect on that, it's quite interesting, again, to sort of reflect the difference in the way we perceive our lives, our culture, the stress we place on ourselves. Versus that. And I think that's quite important. You know, that says a lot.
Yeah, because I think that the more resistant we are to it, the more painful it is as a process, because
that
guilt and that shame of, well, I'm not having periods anymore. And in the West, it somehow makes it that you don't have any value as you get older. Whereas communities that value women as they get older actually do have, you know, women have better perimenopause. You're quite right. I know this from my mother. And from a lot of the Asian and African women I've grown up with, their perimenopause and menopause is nothing like ours. You know, and I'm like, what are people doing so differently? The diets are usually a lot fresher and better. But so thank you so much. I have cat hair and cats everywhere. Thank you so much, Liz, for coming in. This is the amazing Dr. Liz Leake.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Such a pleasure. My name is Geeta Sidhu-Rob. This is Activate Yourself. I hope you found this helpful and illuminating and interesting. Come and look us up if you want more information about this, because we are creating a community where you can ask questions to learn more about this live, because it's not like we need more bloody information. We have so much of it already. What we really need is the ability to be able to ask questions of women that have been where we've been and know how to help us, because sometimes you just need a human answering your questions, and that's what we're offering to you. So come and look us up and find our community. And thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.